Welcome to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Zaltzberg, editor of the Herald Times in Bloomington, along with Mary Catherine Carmichael. And today we're going to talk about preserving history in our community. Our guests today are Jill Lesh, the managing director of the Monroe County History Center, and Danielle McClellan, who's the executive director of the Buskirk Chumley Theater. If you have questions or comments, please phone us at 855-0811 or 877-285-9348 or send your email to noon@indiana.edu. Jill, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And Danielle, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Good to see you both here. Mary Catherine.
Hey, Bob.
Hi. Good to have you back.
Glad to be back.
You're back last week.
I was going to say I was here last week.
Trying to trick you. Well, we're going to talk about history today. It's obviously a very big topic, and there are a lot of different directions we can go. So I thought I'd start out with a very general question for Jill to talk about the history of the History Center.
Yes, thank you. It's the old Carnegie Library building, and that was the local library for 90 years, or 90 years ago is when it was built in 1918. It was 52 years our local library before it moved across the street. And before that, on that same location, was the Central School, which was known as the Colored School. Mm-hmm. And now it is the museum, our county museum. We also built on an addition 10 years ago that allowed us to have exhibit space for rotating exhibits that we call on the community to help us with, to have a store, to have a library. It's our genealogy and local history library, and to have programs. In the basement of what was the library when they would have programs, mm-hmm. down in the basement is now our main floor, and we have programs there now. So it's a wonderful reuse for that building.
And I have to say that your museum shop is really outstanding. If people haven't visited that before, I know Christmas is over, but, you know, everybody's got birthdays and whatnot. I mean, it's a fantastic shopping opportunity.
It is the place for local things.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's great stuff.
I want to get back to you about some of the things that are in the museum, but I want to turn to Danielle because the Buskirk Chumley is sort of a living history museum in a way.
I mean, it's
history in another sense. So
yes.
Talk about the history of that building.
Well, the Buskirk Chumley Theater was originally built in 1922 as the Indiana Theater, and it was a silent movie house. It had an organ down front where live music accompaniment would go along with the films. There was occasional live performances from big bands to magicians to raffles for dishes that occurred during the Depression. It was a very common way for movie theaters to encourage patrons to come to the movies. So the theater has always been a mix of both film and live performance. The theater continued to operate as a movie theater all the way until 1995. When Carisotis, which owned the building at that time, donated the building to the Bloomington Area Arts Council for renovation as a performing arts center. And from 1995 to 1999, the Arts Council worked diligently to restore the building and return it to the community gathering place that it is today. BCT Management, which is a private nonprofit organization, has managed the theater since 2001, and it's currently owned by the city of Bloomington and then managed by BCT Management.
Now, could you talk a little bit about the there was a time when you didn't show any films, and now there are some films that are being shown. How did that all evolve?
All right. Let's see. It's fairly standard practice in the movie theater industry when an old theater is decommissioned and sold to another buyer that the movie theater industry, the owners, generally restrict the property so that it can no longer be a movie theater. And the buyers look at the property knowing that well in advance. And Carisotis did this in the same way when they donated the building to the Bloomington Area Arts Council, which was not seen really as much of a problem since there's an overwhelming amount of live performance in the community that needed space to occur in. However, we did not want to lose the legacy of the building and its connection to film. So when BCT Management took over in 2001, we went back to the Carisotis Movie Theater Company and talked with Tony Carisotis and ask him would he be willing to renegotiate the deed on that property so that film could continue to be part of our programming there. And he was very amenable, and with help of Vi Simpson and a large number of other community members, we were able to get that deed renegotiated so that we can now show any film in the building that is a year old or older. And in fact, in practice, in most cases, if we have a film event that we want to show and I'm able to contact Mr. Karasotis, he's always been very, very helpful and allowed us to show pretty much any film that we want to. Mm-hmm. Consequently, we have a pretty full calendar of film events throughout the year. We have the Golden Age of Hollywood Film Festival or film series, which shows a classic film from the 30s, 40s, or 50s every single month for free at the theater. We have the Cinephile Film Festival, which is Indiana films, so celebrating our local filmmakers. We have the Pride Film Festival, as well as a variety of other sort of random movie events that occur at the theater.
And with the improved sight lines post-renovation, it's really a great place to see anything.
It really is a fantastic venue, especially for film. It's one of the largest screens in the community at this time. We have a 30 by 20 foot screen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The Busker Chumley and everything that's going on there could make an entire program, I'm sure, or more than one. And we'll talk more about the theater as we go along. But I know we want to talk about history and preserving history in the mm-hmm. community in general. Okay. So I'm going to ask that big, broad question. Why is it important? Why should we preserve our history? Jill?
I'll take that one.
Okay.
We need to preserve it really to make it come alive. We need to have our community involved. We need to have it part of our heritage. We need to know that heritage. We need to be able to enjoy it, appreciate it, and act on it. Mm-hmm. And getting the community involved with it is really important.
Mm-hmm. I think it helps us understand why we are who we are, too, both as individuals and as a community. Mm-hmm. Really gives us a framework.
I think I agree with that. I mean, I asked the question, obviously, and we all have individual answers. Danielle, what's your answer to that?
I feel that the history of the theater is an integral part of the way in which we direct our programming. And as the primary venue in the downtown area and in many ways a sort of icon of Bloomington, mm-hmm. what we want more than anything to occur in the building is an articulation of our culture, who we are, where we come from, what this place is about. The creation of art in this locality is really primary to the development of an identity for mm-hmm. Bloomington and the people who live here. Mm-hmm. Without that expression, we don't really know who we are, just as you said, Mary Catherine. And we try, in managing the theater and creating program in that space, to do as much as we possibly can to help our artists locally find their voice to articulate that individual locality and regionality of who we are, and to bring other musicians and live performances and film that also give that articulation.
Mm-hmm. I think it also gives us a sense of, you know, we're living in the moment, of course, but things haven't always been this way and things won't always be mm-hmm. this way. So mm-hmm. we have to sort of accept the fact that we're passing through time. In a sort of a related point, you know, with the closing of GE, I've been going back and looking at several articles in the paper and trying to get some history of the manufacturing industry or the manufacturing and what's happened. And even though I've been here through a lot of plant closings, it's just fascinating to go back and look and see how, you know, people who are in Bloomington now think of it as a community with a lot of high-tech industry and a lot of life sciences and all that. But it hasn't been that long ago, and we had thousands and thousands and thousands of people working in factories. Mm-hmm. The GE plant had 3,200 people at its peak, and, mm-hmm. and Thompson RCA had 8,300 people at its peak working in those plants. So it is an interesting thing just to go back.
Yeah, we've been forced to reinvent each other many times. The limestone industry, the kind of rise and then tapering off of that, I think there's a lot of parallels to be made.
Yeah. So at the History Center, how do you display, or what kinds of things do you have that would teach people about those things, the limestone industry, manufacturing legacy?
Sure. In the old part of the library, which was the main library, the Carnegie Library, that's our permanent exhibit. And we have very nice exhibits on the limestone industry, the showers, mm-hmm. Furniture, and so forth. And then we have the rotating exhibits that are in three different halls. And we call in the community to supplement our collection. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I wanted to mention when you were talking about the history is now mm-hmm. is the photo collection that we have. And we're inviting the community to either give us photos or to let us scan some of those precious photos, but not just historic photos, photos right now. I mean, it's if they're storefront or an event, and in 50 years, those are historic, mm-hmm. and those are really valuable for us, and they will be for the community. If now is a good chance, I'd love to talk about two projects. One's called the Faces and Places Project, and that's where we ask people to bring their photos in, loan them to us for 24 hours or a week. We scan them. We give them back to you. You still have them, but we can use them in our mission. And we are developing a very nice collection in that respect. And then the other is our new online database of local historic photos. And we launched that just last month. And it's on – you can get to it from our website, which is just monroehistory.org. And you can search by keywords – anything that's in the text about the photograph or people. You can also do just random, and it'll just keep bringing up random photos. There are over 3,000 of our over 6,000 photos up there now, and every few weeks we put more up as we get more scanned and more documented. But the public reaction we've had has been marvelous, and people have called us then with more ideas for photos or bringing photos in, and that's mm-hmm. just what we hoped.
What kind of criteria do you use when evaluating photos that people bring in?
Well, they need to be relatively clear. You need to be a big enough size that you can see them. Mm-hmm. But if they're about Monroe history, Monroe County history, or people in Monroe County, we want them.
So you could have a picture of your grandparents standing next to their 1956 Chevy, and that would be of interest.
It sure would be.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, turn that one over, would you?
Right now. Mine would be in Wisconsin, so I don't think she wants that.
Our phone number is 855-0811, 877-285-9348. And you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. We're talking about history in our community, why it's important to preserve it. And our guests are Jill Lesh from the Monroe County History Center and Danielle McClellan from the Buskirk Chumley Theater. Jill, along the lines of the Faces and Places project, are you going to how are you going to use those? You're talking about the online database, and people will be able to see, I assume, those pictures. They'll be able to see the photos. They'll be able to see them there. Are you going to take some of them and use them in exhibits in the theater itself or in the museum itself?
In the theater. Yes, they'll be available for various exhibits. And one exhibit that we're going to have this spring that'll open in May is the history of the courthouse, which turns 100 years old, mm-hmm. and what life was like in 1908. So we're hoping to blow up some of those photos from that period. So if anyone has any photos in their attic from the early 1900s, that would be fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now, Danielle, you've started something new at the Buskirk Chumley. I think it opened in December. Why don't you tell us about how you're telling the community about that history?
Yes. In December of this year, we turned 85 years old. Again, we were built in 1922. And we are celebrating in this whole 2007-2008 season that history and our part in the community. And one aspect of doing that celebration has been to transform our second floor textilery gallery into a permanent history exhibit that tells the story of the Indiana Theater. It also has a lot of very interesting anecdotes about the movie theater industry in Bloomington in general, which was has always been very, very strong. Movies have always been a very big part of the entertainment that occurs in Bloomington. That exhibit was researched and created by Susan Ferrantinos, who's a local public historian and also the public history manager for the Organization of American Historians. So we were very lucky to receive her donated time and effort to doing at least the very initial research that we would like to eventually do in a much more extensive manner about the history of the theater. And just as Jill is calling on the community for your pictures of all random events related to Monroe County, we're specifically looking for material and photos and stories that the community holds right now somewhere in their private scrapbooks and archives and basements and cardboard boxes under their bed that might have anything to do with the theater. Available material that we were able to find in the History Center or the IU archives or in the Herald Times archives, all of those things are very, very brief. There's not a whole lot available. So we think that there's a great deal more material out there that we would like to receive. And we will be working in tandem with the History Center to make sure that material is preserved and available for larger scopes of research, as well as what we might do to display it and tell the story of the theater at the theater.
What about oral histories?
We are very interested in hearing oral histories. We have a research assistant that's working with Susan to record oral histories. And this could be the story of you and your, you know, future wife or husband getting together and having their first date at the theater. We actually had an event a couple years ago where that, in fact, actually occurred, and someone's 50th wedding anniversary was occurring. And their kids got together and staged a reenactment of some sort along with a video sequence that played at the theater. So, you know, any story that you have related to the theater, we would love to set up an appointment with you and record that history. And you would just simply need to contact the theater. My email is director@buskirkchumley.org, or you can call 323-3020.
Okay. I have several follow-up questions, but we also have a phone call. We're going to go to Charlie on the phone first. Charlie?
Hello.
Hi, Charlie.
Yes, I'm calling as a member of the Monroe County Civil War Roundtable, and I want to tell Jill how much we appreciate their support. We meet there twice a month on the second Tuesday in the evening, and that meeting room just really works great, and we've really enjoyed partnering with them on some exhibits, and we'll be doing our Civil War camp reenactment again this year, which drew quite a crowd when we did it, and we really appreciate their support.
Yeah, Charlie, I think it drew some people from the Herald Times. I think we had some pictures of that.
Yeah, we went.
It was a ball. We had a great time.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
All right. 855-0811, 877-285-9348. And you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. Okay. I want to follow up with a couple of things. One is what you're talking about, the oral histories, remind me of, you know, one of my favorite parts of Morning Edition StoryCorps, and if you've had a chance to hear the stories that they do, and they are
– that's the model we're working on.
Yeah, it's just – it's fascinating because it is just little slices of life that tell you a lot about history. I've learned a whole lot about what it was like for people in, you know, I don't know what years, 30s, 40s, 50s from just those interviews, and so we should talk. We'd be really interested in putting some of those on our website. So
that would be awesome. That would be really, really wonderful.
Broader community.
We really feel like the fact is that the vast majority of the people in Monroe County come through the doors of the Buskirk Chumley Theater at some point over the course of the year, if not multiple times. Mm-hmm. And each of those moments are a memory that is, in fact, the development of history. And each of those moments is the investment that that building sort of captures in its actual place. And we want to be able to make sure that all of those memories are being recorded because, you know, as we're finding now, we don't have enough of them.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's nice, too, we talked a little bit before the show, that people can come in at their leisure. As long as the building doors are unlocked, they can go up to the Textilary Gallery and you know, check out the exhibit. And
we're open 7 days a week from 12 to 5 at the very least, and most of the day, if not 24 hours of the day, the rest of the time. So,
Jill?
I'd like to mention an ongoing oral history project that we have at the History Center. Bud Lynch takes the histories of Monroe County War veterans. Mm-hmm. He records their stories, and we copied their memorabilia and just called the History Center for that.
Yeah. Actually, Bud was on this program a couple years ago
when
he was starting that project, I think. And that was it. I wasn't on, but I called in from the road, I remember. I was so interested in listening to it.
Yeah, it was a great show.
Yeah. Okay, a couple other things. The Indiana Theater, was it the first theater in the community?
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay.
I wish Susan was here to be able to make sure I get all of my facts straight. But definitely the Princess Theater was a much older theater than the Indiana. So it was definitely in existence, and I believe almost all of them. There was at least five in operation in the down, like in a 10 square block area in the downtown area at one time, and over 20 that existed over the course of the history, from the beginning of movies, but the Princess definitely was, I think, 1880s or 1890s. It was it was created as an opera house, so it was even more elegant than the Indiana at that time.
And obviously that building is still in use as it's a restaurant now.
The lobby still exists. The auditorium is gone.
Where is it?
The lobby?
No,
or
the auditorium.
The auditorium.
How do you lose an auditorium?
It caved in.
The back
That's
end.
That's certainly one way
to
lose an auditorium.
Okay. Yeah. I've been here long enough to remember some of these news stories, like when it caved in and when the town theater burned to the ground on the corner, which is now where the empty restaurant is.
Yes.
Used to be.
That we're still hoping someone will come into.
Yeah. Right across from Champs Scotty's.
Or something. Yeah, Champs. Yeah. It used to be, I think. Okay.
Yeah, U Club was there for a while.
Mm-hmm,
and
So that
was the Old Town Cinema.
No, our history of theaters, right?
We know our history of restaurants. Here
restaurants,
we can...
right, yeah. Again, 855-0811-877-285-9348 and send your email to noon@indiana.edu. Jill, I want to ask you about individuals trying to study genealogy and how often they come to the History Center. How much of a draw for the local genealogists is it?
Yes, we have a genealogy local history library, and just this month we expanded the hours, so it is open the same hours as the History Center is open, which is Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
And there is always someone staffing that who is knowledgeable and can help people, and we have marvelous resources for the county. We really do focus on the county. Web-based, there are things that you could go, you know, as far as you want to, but the county is our specialty.
Mm-hmm.
And there are family histories, there are the deed books, the marriage records, everything that you'd want to – that is the place to start. It's the Indiana Room at the library and the History Center Genealogy Library. Those are the two places, and they're just across the street from each other. So we have genealogists coming, especially in the summertime, from all over the country to hit our place and the library place.
Okay, I've got one. This is what I love about this. I get to ask really dumb questions because I know nothing about doing a family.
I thought that was my job.
Well, you too. We share it. I know nothing about doing a family history. So if I wanted to start, you know, I know who my mother and father and my grandparents on either side were, and that's all I know. But if I wanted to start a family history and try to go back, and what would I do? What would be my first step?
Well, I think you'd have to go into to our library and ask them. But there are records of what businesses were where. There are city directories that are for almost every year since they started making those. We've got the earliest maps of the city layouts. I think you would find out where your family was from in the county, start looking in those townships, and get our resources. And let me mention that we have a new book that just came out in December, and it's called the Family Heritage Book of Monroe County. It's the second one. The one other one was 20 years ago. And this has over 150 family histories in it with photos, and it has the story of the courthouse fish, and it has a brief history of the county. And that's for sale in the store for $30.
Okay. Before we go to break, we're going to go to break in a minute. Are the Buskirk and Chumley families in that Monroe County Heritage book? You might not know the answer to that question.
I'm sure they're either in the original one or in this one. Okay. I'm sure they're in one of the two, and maybe both.
All right. Well, when we come back, I want Danielle to talk a little bit about how the Buskirk and Cholmondeley families, what their history is and what their connection is to the theater. All right. Well, you're listening to Noon Edition. We'll be back after a short break.
You're listening to Noon Edition on member-supported WFIU. Production support comes from Closets 2, providing organized and expanded closet and storage space for home office and garage using a variety of systems with no major renovations. Closets 2 owned and operated in Bloomington, 332-2233. And from South Dunn Street Project, represented by Brian Lappin Real Estate, classic bungalow-inspired architecture in the Bryan Park neighborhood of Bloomington, www.southdunnstreet.info. WFIU is a media sponsor for A Day On, Not a Day Off. The City of Bloomington invites volunteers to be involved with local organizations that have created service projects. Participating organizations and volunteers will be honored at the King Holiday Celebration in the Buskirk Cholmondeley Theater, Monday, January 21st at 7. More at WFIU.org.
Welcome back to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Zaltzberg from the Herald Times, along with Mary Catherine Carmichael and our guest today, Jill Lesh, who is the Managing Director of the Monroe County History Center, and Danielle McClellan, the Executive Director of the Buskirk Cholmondeley Theater. If you have questions or comments, please phone us at 855-0811 or 877-285-9348, or you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. I might mention, you know, we serve a lot of counties, and this show today is pretty Monroe County specific. But if you're from outside of Monroe County and you have questions about, you know, the history of your region or other things about how to develop how to go about providing history in your region or just history in general, we'd certainly love to hear from you too. So before the break, I asked about the Buskirk and Cholmondeley name on the theater, and it has historical significance.
We were talking about all of the other theaters that existed at one time in the downtown area, and it is true that the Buskirk Cholmondeley Theater is the sole remaining theater that actually does exist, let alone continues as an operational theater. So we're very, very lucky in this community to have a downtown theater in operation that's doing both live and film performance. And we would not have been able to have that be true in our community if it were not for the Bloomington Area Arts Council and the incredible fundraising effort that this entire community put forward to save the theater and renovate it and get it back up and running again. And the Buskirk Cholmondeley family was an integral part of that. They gave the lead gift to start off the fundraising campaign and thus received naming rights for the theater. We continue to be in close contact with both Norris Cholmondeley and Gary Cholmondeley here in the community.
They have a historical connection to the theater itself, though, those families?
I'm not sure exactly how far back the tie goes, but I do know that the Cholmondeley family actually currently lives in the Vonderschmidt house. The Vonderschmidt family was, in fact, the family that built the Buskirk Cholmondeley Theater, what was called the Indiana at that time, as well as several other, I think, five different theaters in the region. Mm-hmm. They sort of had a thing for castles. The original interior of the auditorium of the Indiana had two bas-relief castles on either side of the screen. The Vonderschmidt house actually kind of looks like a castle. Mm-hmm. It has a little turret and all of that kind of thing. And so the Cholmondeleys still live there, or they live there now. So there is at least that connection. I'm not sure how far back the connection with the theater goes. I wasn't involved in the fundraising mm-hmm. That the Arts Council did, so I didn't hear all of that history. But one of the things we're really hoping to do is get oral histories mm-hmm. from the Cholmondeleys.
Make those connections.
Oh,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be great. All right, 855-0811, 877-285-9348, and you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. Let's talk, Jill, again about some of the other aspects of the History Center, some of the other things in your collection. I know, you know, one of the things that I always hear about and I always remember seeing when I've gone into the History Center at various times is the big bear that used to be at Schmaltz's.
I knew you were going to say
you know,
that.
That's the most recognizable thing. So.
In the museum, it's right at the top of the stairs. And so people who were around for the Schmaltz store, of course, they remember it and recognize it, and it's a very wonderful icon. But now school groups see it, and it's becoming part of their heritage, too, just because they see it. It's really about the first thing they see when they enter the museum.
Right.
Daniel, I have a question about we talked earlier about how, Jill, you made reference to actually photos you take today are our history in a sense. And I'm wondering, Daniel, do you have the I guess it's more of a storage issue, if anything. Are you retaining like programs and photos from events and those kinds of things to start building your own archive for the rejuvenated Buskirk Chumley Theater?
Absolutely. In fact, we're hoping this summer to sort of organize what we have collected thus far in the 5 years that – or almost six now that we've been operating the theater and the material that we had left from the Bloomington Area Arts Council, their fundraising efforts, and the beginning of their operation, and get that organized and actually donate it to the History Center so that they can keep it, because we have absolutely no room at the theater. Every single square inch of the theater is utilized for programming and what goes on there on a daily basis. But this is why the History Center is such a wonderful resource in our community, is that we as individuals or as organizations can simply collect that material and then turn it over to experts in preservation. So,
and as a follow-up to that, what are the sort of changes that have been brought about with technology today? I mean, there are computers now. Like you were talking about scanning photographs. I mean, does that mean that we don't have to keep big stacks of photos? We can keep them all in a computer. What's sort of the trend in
preservation?
I guess, yeah.
For us, it's doing both. We keep the hard copies in the files, in the boxes, numbered, accession numbers and so forth. But we keep this digital library also. So having that digital library both in-house and on a web-based and a server and with a company that specializes in that, it's just kind of reaching out, or it's expanding its accessibility. But we do both.
I mentioned storage with Danielle. So how do you handle that? I can imagine that, you know, as you acquire more things and history progresses, there are more things important to retain. How do you store everything?
Storage is an issue. Our third floor of the new addition is all storage and workspace. And we have one room that's just our document room, and those photos are in boxes. And we just have to keep getting more efficient and more efficient in the way we keep our things. It's going to eventually be an issue.
Do you ever have to divest yourselves of things? Or how do you handle overflow?
Well, what we really try to do is be selective in what we take. And we welcome everyone in Monroe County to offer us things. But sometimes there are things, if we have duplicates, we don't take. Or if it's better for another county, we offer to that county.
So,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No. Well, I was just going to say it reminds me of some of the things we go through at the newspaper in term, because we've always kept bound volumes of the newspaper, and it's part of our commitment to history of the community. But we can't let anybody touch them now,
as they disintegrate.
Disintegrating. We have them back to maybe 1905, I think, but they're just sort of stored away. Now we have them on microfilm as well, and now we have them, you know, digital copies through back to maybe 1988. But so it's, the way to store these things is changing.
Daniel, what kind of items do you have in your display in the Textillery Gallery?
We have an original poster of the film that opened the Indiana Theater, The Storm.
Where did you get that?
We actually got it on eBay.
I love it. I love it.
It's a fascinating, like, item. It's, you know, it's printed in one color, but it's printed on both sides. So, in fact, in order to display it, what we did was scan it digitally and incorporate it into, you know, a placard that's on the wall. Because, again, just like the newspapers in the archive there, we couldn't display it publicly or allow it to be exposed to light or or it would begin to disintegrate. So, you know, so we have an original poster from 1922. We have a film reel that was found in the building during the renovation. We have a wide multiplicity of photos. There was a fire at the theater in 1933, and we had someone walk in off the street about a year and a half ago and say, "Would you like this photo?" I mean, and they're just carrying it around with them. Here's this photo of the fire, which we hadn't been able to find anywhere.
Oh my gosh.
You know, the anecdotal information that we received was that Herman B. Wells is standing in the photo. Of course, we can't verify that. It kind of looks like him, but it's only his back, so we can't really tell. You know, but so all of those types of things are on display in the exhibit. There's also a memory book where we're asking people to write us an anecdote from now or from the past. Just a little paragraph or a page and a half, whatever you feel like. And we've actually collected some really nice ones thus far.
Yeah, I can't think of too many people from Bloomington who don't have some memory of that theater.
Right.
Go ahead.
Jill?
When you were talking about artifacts, I was thinking about the things that are hard to store and find room, are furniture.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Which made me think of the chair that we have of Big Dave Van Buskirk.
Oh, wow.
And Big Dave is a very local hero, and he was considered the biggest Civil War soldier in the Union Army, and he came from Monroe County.
Mm-hmm.
And we have his chair and his rifle. And he survived the being captured by letting himself be shown as a large person, kind of an oddity. And he came back to the county and was elected county treasurer.
Mm-hmm. That's a great
story.
And
was a farmer.
I always learn about some of the figures from our history when I go about some research for the Monroe County Hall of Fame, which we sponsor every year. And, you know, it's very difficult for people to be elected to the Hall of Fame now if they were important in our county 100 years ago, just because there's so many people that people would vote for that they've known or they've seen in recent history. But it is fascinating to me to look back at some of those people like Big Dave Van Buskirk and other people that I've read about and some of the amazing things they did. They would be, you know, a member of the state legislature and then also be the president of the university and do this and that and be the first county commissioners and, you know, I don't know. It's just very
people
great.
Had an amazing amount of time before email, I think.
I think that's right. Yeah. Right.
Danielle, as someone looks at the theater today, how different is the interior? And I would separate it both, you know, maybe from the lobby, from the auditorium aspect and the exterior of the building.
The lobby is very much what it looked like in 1922 when it was opened. The interior of the auditorium itself is quite different. We actually have not been able to verify and are hoping that someone in the community might have information that would help us verify whether or not the castles were in the original design of the auditorium in 1922 or if they were added after the fire in 1933. Mm-hmm. We have pictures post-33 that show the castles, but nothing before that. So we don't actually know.
Interesting.
Whether or not they were there from the very beginning or if they got added later. We kind of think they were there at the beginning, but we're really not sure. But the interior of the auditorium, at least in the 30s, had the screen in the middle and these two castles on either side that had little mysterious lights. And I'll tell you one of the most frequent stories or reminiscences that I hear from especially older people in the community when they're there to see our Golden Age of Hollywood film series especially are memories of little fairies and princes and princesses that somehow populated the castles in their imagination or I'm not sure. But it seems to be a very frequent memory that people have of seeing actual figures inside the castles. So I don't know why.
Oh, interesting.
Exactly.
Wow.
But it seems, you know, quite natural if you were 4 or 5 years old and you were looking at these magical sort of set pieces that there would be a whole stories occurring in the break between the movies.
How about the exterior of the building?
The exterior of the building is also exquisitely preserved. It looks essentially the way it did in 1922. Mm-hmm. And that was that was a requirement of the theater becoming part of being on the National Register of Historic Places as part of the Downtown Historic District of Bloomington.
The Dogbone Indiana sign is such an icon for mm-hmm. Bloomington. Surely that hasn't been out there since 1926.
Yes, that's actually true. The Dogbone, the marquee, is quite different than what it looked like in 1922 when the theater was originally unveiled. This is, in fact, the third version of the marquee that existed. There was one in the mid-30s that looked essentially like our Dogbone, but was slightly different. It had more jagged edges, and the neon was different. But the Dogbone, as you see it now, was restored from the most recent one that existed on the building when it was turned over to the Arts Council.
All right, great.
All right, 855-0811 in Bloomington, 877-285-9348. Outside the local calling area, and you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. We're doing just fine without our listeners today, but we'd love to hear from them too. Anyway, I wanted to ask Jill about acquisitions. If somebody has something that they think the museum might want, how do they go about getting it to you?
They can call us and talk to us about it. If it's something that would be hard to bring in, then we would go look at it. We have a committee called our Collections and Exhibits Committee, mm-hmm. and they review everything that's offered. Mm-hmm. So they review it for its appropriateness and how it would fit into our collection.
Can you tell me, like, what percentage of things offered do you actually take for the museum? Mm. Do you have any idea? Is it a high percentage or maybe every other thing?
I would guess it's two-thirds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you don't turn a lot of things down. But.
Right.
And we should mention you just received a very prestigious award.
Well, the county did. Monroe County just got a National Preserve America Award for the community. That's a fabulous honor. It's a new initiative out of the White House with the Historic Preservation Advisory Board and various federal agencies. But that will give us meaning the county and all the organizations within the county, opportunities for grants within that program. And I think Cheryl Munson really spearheaded that effort with the County Historic Preservation Review Board. But it was because we've got such a marvelous support of historic preservation and rebuilding with BRI, with the city, mm-hmm. with the builders, with the county. And we've got so many districts that are historic districts. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we just have a fabulous track record, and it's documented. We have good inventories, a good way of proving what we've got. So it's just a wonderful recognition for Monroe County.
Great. Very exciting.
We have callers. Okay. Arvid is first. Arvid?
Yes. I have a question on scanning. You said earlier in the program that you scan photographs. And I would like to know how you can ensure, or is there even a way to ensure that the formats that they are in are going to be readable, viewable, say, 50 years from now?
That's a very good question. That's why we keep a hard copy.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Arvid, thanks a lot.
I wonder if he meant, for example, Jill, you and I had an experience recently where I had a postcard that was of interest to you, and so you scanned the postcard and then kindly returned it to me. I wonder if he's wondering, you know, now the scan that you have, how viable is that, or how long is that going to be readable?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, the scan that we make, then we print out a hard copy. That's on good photographic paper. It's kept in acid-free environment. That should be good. We put it on CDs and we put it in our on our database. So I hope that we'll be able to transfer these from one new technology mm-hmm. to the next. But just as a backup, we keep a hard copy of what we have scanned and give you back your original.
Good old paper.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Alisa next. Alisa?
Hi. My question has to do with the newspaper archives and the online availability of the paper. I know you say that the paper goes back to 1988 online, but I've discovered through using the obituary index at the public library online that actually obituaries don't go back that far. They're very sporadic, and I was wondering what sort of projects there are, or if there are any projects to manually enter or perhaps scan to bring up the online archives to actually go back to 88 or even beyond that?
Well, I thought our archives were pretty complete back through 1988. So if they're not, I'll just have to check on that. And we do have, there is the ability to microfilm, to look at microfilm.
I do that regularly, but I have a day job which gets in the way of library hours, and so it would be nice. I'd love to maybe even offer some time for bringing the online Herald Times up to date.
Yeah, well, I'll just have to check on that, because I was under the impression that we were complete through 1988.
No. In fact, if you use the link at the very bottom of the Herald Times website, you can jump to any day, the day, month, year fields you can enter in. And the further back you go, the fewer and fewer articles come up. And I sometimes use that approach to looking for the older obituaries. Sometimes even, 95 is really the oldest, the furthest back I can go and consistently get results.
Okay, I'll check on that.
Okay.
All right. I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Valerie next. Valerie?
I've got a question about the Busker Chumley Theater. I grew up in Bloomington and remember many a Saturday matinee with my brother at the Indiana watching such notorious features as the original Godzilla and Rodan. I don't know how many.
That's awesome.
And, I don't live in Bloomington anymore, and so I actually have not been in the theater since it became the Busker Chumley Theater, but I gather from your discussion that the castles are no longer there, and if that's true, then why were they removed?
The castles were not, recreated when the restoration of the building occurred because of the need for use of the theater as a live performance venue. If the castles had been there, they would be obstructing sight lines, as well as there is a great deal of need for the installation of lighting bays and, equipment area so that we could have lighting and sound for live performance.
I do remember them well. I don't remember any fairies or anything, but
darn.
Too bad they're not there. So. Thanks.
Catherine actually has a comment about that
I
as
do.
Well.
By the time the Arts Council took over ownership of the building, those were long gone.
Yeah, they.
So those were the demolition of those predated by some time.
They would have had to have been recreated,
right? Because Valerie, I don't know the last time you were in the theater, but it had been subdivided into two separate theaters. There was an upstairs theater with very steep, steeply raked seating, and a screen upstairs, and then what was originally the main floor had its own screen. And so, in order for them to accommodate that, I'm sure many, many years ago, the castles were taken out, and probably as a part of that adaptive reuse of the building. So, those are long gone.
Yeah. It is nice to look at the photos of them, but it would not work functionally to have them.
And then it would have been a recreation as opposed to a restoration because, again,
they were gone.
Yeah.
We're going to get to this email in just a minute, but I want to give Danielle an opportunity to talk about Squonk.
Yes.
Which is coming up. And it's an intersection between the Busker Chumley and the History Center.
Absolutely. As I mentioned before, we're celebrating our 85th anniversary this year in our 2007-2008 season. The history exhibit upstairs on the second floor of the gallery is just part of that celebration. A second very large part of that is bringing to Bloomington the company Squonk Opera. They are a multimedia performance company that's based out of Pittsburgh. They spent some time in New York with a huge off-Broadway hit, returned to Pittsburgh, and continue their work there. They've created a project called Your Hometown, the Opera, where the company comes to your hometown, involves a variety of different performing groups from the area, as well as collecting video interviews with all of the colorful people of your community and doing filming of the area, collecting archival material of your history, which is where the Buskirk Chumley Theater and the History Center will be working together on this project. And then create Bloomington, the opera. It involves video projection, music, dance, theater, puppetry, and some of our local performers. We're going to have Windfall Dancers, which has been in the community over 25 years at this point and is a wonderful resource that we have here. The Arthur Murray Dancers will be on stage, as well as a wonderful IU-affiliated group called the Gumshoe Dancers that do a type of step dance that's based in South Africa. So they'll all be part of the show. It's really a roast and toast of our community. Don't let opera, the word opera, scare you if you're not a big classical music fan. This music is very modern, sort of cutting edge, might have a little bit of a rock and roll feel to it at different points. What they create is a spectacle that you won't be able to turn away from it and will be very appropriate for the whole family.
Sounds like a hoot. I can't wait.
When are they coming?
March 20th and 21st, okay. But we'll actually kick off their, you know, the whole creation of this with a residency where they'll be in the community February 4th through the 8th.
Mm-hmm. So there'll be two performances?
Two performances, one on Thursday the 20th and one on Friday the 21st.
Okay.
And we have, we have an email, and then we want to talk about Sundays on Saturday, too. So
we have 2 minutes to do it.
Okay. I'll be fast. February 12, 2009, this is an email that came in, by the way, will be the 200th birthday of Abraham Lincoln, who grew up just a few counties south of us. Are there any plans at the History Center or the theater to celebrate Abe and his Indiana connection next year?
Hmm. We'd better get some, hadn't we?
What a great question. Great idea.
Interesting thought. We hadn't really investigated programming on Abe, but maybe we will now.
All right. Well, I will pass this along to you two. And let's hear about Sundays on Saturday.
Yes. A week from tomorrow, that's January 26th. That Saturday is the kickoff of the Week of Chocolate. And at the History Center in the afternoon from 1 to 4, we'll have Sundays on Saturday. And that is the history of ice cream making. And we will have, with the admission price, which is $2 for adults, $1 for children, members free, you can make your own sundaes with all the chocolate toppings you want and hear old-time music, fiddle and banjo music, and see the museum and have a great time.
Will we get to crank the ice cream maker?
For you, yes.
Sounds great. All right, we are out of time. I appreciate both of you coming in today. Danielle McClellan from the Buskirk Chumley and Jill Lesh from the Monroe County History Center. For Mary Catherine Carmichael and producer Catherine
Hageman.
Catherine Becker Hageman. And Mike Pashkash, our engineer. I'm Bob Salzberg. Thanks for listening.
Noon Edition is a production of WFIU and the Herald Times. A podcast of this and other WFIU programs is available at wfiu.org.